Welcome in to a Saturday morning edition of the Locked On Knicks podcast. I'm your host, Gavin Shaw, going solo on this edition of Fan Friday on a Saturday. So without further ado, we welcome on Neil Yerumian to talk a Clyde jinx, not a curse. It's not a curse. He made that very clear. A Clyde jinx and a new idea on how the NBA can discourage teams from tanking. All that and more on this edition of Locked On Knicks.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Knox foul from behind, count and one, as Fisdale pumps his fist.
Milikina. What he does is contagious.
Robinson with a catch and slam. Across the lane to Trier. Trier drives down.
All right, so as promised on this edition of Fan Fridays, which is coming out on a Saturday, we welcome in Neil Yerumian. Neil, how's it going? Welcome to the podcast. I'm glad I could finally butcher your last name in front of you.
Thank you, Gavin. Thanks for having me. It's going pretty good. Just enjoyed watching that game tonight, getting back into the tank form of things.
Yeah, don't want to get too far out of rhythm. So I want to take you back to fonder days, Neil, because I don't we'll save some tank talk for the end, but sure. I don't want to blow it too early. How did you first become a Knicks fan?
Well, when I went to college, a lot of my friends actually introduced me to 2K. Shout out to Charles, Brian, and Loy. And I really wasn't a basketball fan at that time. And honestly, I just told my friends I wanted a run-and-gun team. And one of them introduced me into, at the time it was Antoni down there. And my friend was telling me all about the 7 seconds Nick, like Suns and Amari Stoudemire. So I sort of dug into them that year only because I loved them in 2K. And then I just started watching the games and loved it. And it's been history since.
And then I can probably guess based on the era you started watching, but maybe it'll surprise me a little bit. Who's your all time favorite Nick?
Ooh, all time. That's hard because I think it was Amari, but a lot of shade has been thrown on him after his career and the way he ended it with the Knicks, but. It's still got to be him because, like you said, it was the era for me jumping in there. They just got him, and he was, I don't know, he was just the man back then.
Yeah, no, he was. I mean, I remember like the first, like we talk a lot on this podcast about that 2012-13 season. I think just because of the ages that me and Alex are, that was kind of our golden team. But the second example of that is the first 40 games of that first Amari season, I want to say 10-11. And like when they were just rolling with Gallo, with Fat Ray, Wilson Chandler was super competent. Like that was just a genuinely enjoyable team. And I don't know if this one stood out to you, but that game, like right before the All-Star break, that if I'm remembering correctly, and I think like Amari dropped like 37 and then they got Melo and then like his knee kind of broke down. He was never the same after that, but he just had like some monster performances in the first half of that year.
Yeah, I mean, it was just great to follow him along, too. I mean, you saw, like, the flashes of him trying to get back there, and you just always wanted to root for that guy to get back to 100%.
Do you remember that? I think it didn't count, but, like, that deep three he hit against the Celtics that would have won the game if it was on time?
That's right, yep.
That was just – there were just some iconic moments in there, and I remember I'm still retroactively bummed that they – traded their whole team for Melo, and obviously it didn't set them on a very good path. But I think Neil, you're kind of in a good spot because you've only been doing this for about 9 years, which is clear, obviously a fairly large amount of time. But I guess relative to some Knicks fans, you haven't had to deal with quite as much trauma, and yet simultaneously, you've never. I mean, I guess kind of similar to me, you've never really known those highs. What's sort of your like general like. Let's call it like health status as a Knicks fan right now. Like, you feeling pretty good, pretty optimistic, like not super worn down by the last decade of incompetence, or are you still kind of cautious and like a little bit hesitant to fully dive deep into the idea that the Knicks are all of a sudden going to land two star free agents.
I mean, like a lot of people, I think you gain hope. You gained hope just when Scott Perry came in and everything. But you know, after so many years, I'm just holding in there, and you tell yourself every year that, you know, they're tanking this year to make things better. And it hasn't gotten there. It's funny, they finally start tanking, and I'm sorry to go back onto it, but and they've changed the statistics of things. Overall, though, especially for the past couple of years, to keep my sanity, I definitely like to focus on, like, two or three players instead of watching the whole team. That's how I get by.
And then this year, obviously, I mean, I can probably guess as well, but who have those guys been for you this season that have sort of kept you in check and I guess keep feeding you new hope?
I mean, at first it was Knox, and he really did come on strong, and that was pretty impressive. And now it's just completely flipped to Mitchell Robinson, of course. He's just scary. Like, especially with the stuff he did in high school. I don't think people are talking enough about that. Like, he had a 3-point shot there. He could shoot back there. If he just gets a little bit of jumpers in him, it's going to be scary.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm always like, and I'm sure, I mean, if you've listened to the podcast recently, like I always fight back when like Alex presents that idea, because I'm like, look, like this is the NBA. Like, all these guys can like sort of shoot threes, and like in high school games, like where there's less pressure and like they get to take 30 shots, like, and get in rhythm, like they're gonna make some. And like I never really know like if it's a thing in the NBA. But with Mitchell Robinson, I've like almost gotten to the point where like how can you really doubt the guy? He just keeps sort of pulling new rabbits out of the hat. If rabbits represent different skills in this convoluted analogy I'm throwing together here, and he just continues to shock. So I think you might be onto something there. And I genuinely I just wouldn't be surprised by anything at this point. All right. So with that, we'll wrap up this first segment on Locked On Knicks. We'll come back. Neil has a pretty cool idea on what has kept the Knicks from being good over the last 20 years or so. That next on Locked On Knicks. Welcome back into Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast. I am Gavin Shull, joined by my guy Neil on the second ever edition of Fan Fridays, the first one to ever be on a Saturday. All right, Neil, I'm going to cede the floor to you, because you just hit us up, and this is a big part of the reason we were convinced to bring you on. You have a take on why the Knicks have been bad over the last 20 years. I don't want to spoil it further than that. I'm ceding the floor to you. Go ahead and explain it.
Well, it's not really a spoiler, because it was brought up on a past episode with James. And I brought it up there as Clyde has a curse. Walt Clyde has a curse on the Knicks in that they will not be able to win while he's present in the building. And that took a lot of heat from people on Twitter. James was nice enough to tell people not to swap me and to, be chill to each other. I think I would have taken a lot more heat. I didn't expect everyone to get that worked up about it. So I just want to plead my case that a curse doesn't always have to be a bad thing, which is why I'm trying to call it more of a jinx.
Sure.
I have the definition for it here, and it's a person or thing that brings bad luck. Now, it's not necessarily evil or in that form, but I just sort of think this man who's been here, and I mean, I love him as a person. I love the way he dresses. It's fantastic. It's just odd to me that he came around right around the time the 90s Knicks started going downhill, and they've been in their current state sort of ever since. And I just think it's a little irony there that the only man who's ever won a Knicks title, they can't seem to gain any traction while he's the color commentator. And I plan to bring my wife on to talk about him, because she watches the games with me, and she is one of his least biggest fans. So she definitely has an influence on me with this. But in a sense, it's a combination of how I see him talk about the team in some ways. I see a lot of times Mike Breen has to sort of catch him on things. Just tonight, he was talking about a player who I think it was Mitch who went up for a block and barely touched the guy, and Clyde went off all about the things that that he has to do better and that wasn't a good play. And then it shows the replay, and Breen steps in and says, like, something like, I don't even see where the foul was. It's just little things like that. So again, I just want to close it. I said it was a curse. Not all curses are bad things. They can just be unfortunate situations. And that's that, pretty much.
I like how canny you are. Like, it's very like political. You're like, all right, we got to change the branding on this a little bit. Put the idea back out under a new moniker, not a curse, but a jinx. I really enjoyed the level of nuance there. And I'm with you on Clyde as a color analyst a little bit, but I think it, like, it almost just endears him to me further, because, like, at this point, like, I mean, him and Breen are, like, I mean, for you, for me, kind of the only voices of the Knicks that we've known. And it's almost like it's simultaneously, like, sad to see him, like, maybe slip a little bit, like, where, like, occasionally he has, like, some incorrect takes. Though overall, I will say, like, at his age, like, I would be very happy to be, like, as sharp as he is at this point. And like, even when he's wrong, like, it almost just, like, I guess I just said it, but, like, endears me to him a little bit more. And I love that Breen, who, like, clearly they've developed such a bond over the years, is there to sort of, like, lightly correct him. And as someone who aspires to play-by-play broadcasting, like, I think it's sort of a masterclass how Breen is able to balance, like, correcting without embarrassing his partner. As far as the jinx, I don't know if I can go down that rabbit hole, just because I look at James Dolan, who's been there for the same amount of time functionally, and I also naturally hate, versus Clyde, who I love. So I guess maybe it's selective reasoning, and you're absolutely right about this. And I just tend to focus in on the guy I dislike. But I think I would want to pin it on Dolan. That being said, I do think it's an interesting take, and I appreciate the audacity of it, for sure.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah. And I want to, I mean, you mentioned it quickly, but I think it's pretty interesting that your wife is so into the games as well. Was she, like, always a basketball fan and always a Knicks fan, or was that something that you kind of got her into?
No, I joke that I was fortunate enough to meet her right around Lynn's sanity. If it was any other time and I tried to introduce her to myself and watching these games every other night, you know, she probably wouldn't have stayed with me. But so she really bought into that hype. We loved watching those games, and now she'll tolerate it. She watches just about every game with me, so I'm very fortunate in that sense.
Yeah, no, that's pretty awesome. That's, I mean, you know, it's something to aspire to, Neil. I think you're living, like, every Knicks fan's dream right now. And I kind of like that she's, I mean, obviously, like, engaged enough to, like, have, like, a strong opinion on Clyde. And I know you mentioned initially we were going to try and get her to come on the podcast too. Unfortunately, I dragged you into recording at around 11:30 p.m. Eastern time, so that was no longer a possibility. But next time around, I'd be interested to hear some takes from her.
Of course, she'd love to.
All right, awesome. Okay, so with that, we'll wrap up the second segment. And Neil, I know you got one more fire take for us before we finish up this edition of Locked On Knicks. Third and final segment, back with Neil on Fan Fridays on a Saturday. Neil, we talked about not a curse, but a jinx of Clyde Frazier, your background as a Knicks fan. And now we'll finish up. You are bringing to the table kind of a new idea on how the Knicks, correct me if I'm wrong here, but how the Knicks could potentially not tank.
Oh, actually, this was a league to fix the league to tank.
Oh, gotcha, yeah. gotcha. Yeah. Okay.
I'll be pretty brief about it. I think it's pretty simple. They implement it after we get Zion, of course. But the idea is to remove the eighth seed as a locked position in the playoffs, and to make spots 8 through 12 as a play a March Madness style termination round to decide who's going to be the eighth seed. So the idea is there that teams still have to compete all the way until the 12th seed. You can't really fall behind in that sense and just start tanking, because your fans would look for you to at least hit that that 12th seed. And the benefits of these, of course, are like some of the worst teams might have a playoff hope. They're sparking at the end here. I mean, if you could imagine that the Knicks could keep going at the pace they are now these past couple nights, with the way that they're clicking, maybe there's a chance that they could climb their way back up into the 12th seed, and then who knows. And that leaves four spots to still have that 14% chance of getting the first round pick. And whoever the team is that does make it into the playoffs, they probably get some lower round, knockoff placement. That's basically the idea.
Yeah. No, I really like that. And I know Bill Simmons has suggested something semi-similar in the past, but I think his version was like more convoluted, like it involved like every team that's not in the postseason. But I like the idea of it having 12 as sort of a cutoff, because I guess like the truly like abysmal, like all-time bad teams in the NBA, which I guess like up to a certain point, you could probably throw the Knicks in that category, even though I wouldn't quite go that far down the rabbit hole, are sort of out of it. But like those mid-tier teams that like late in the season would tend to just inexplicably like, oh, like, you know, or like I'm just sort of looking at the standings right now, like for the Wizards, like, oh, you know what, Bradley Beal's hamstring is kind of sore. You would sort of be guilted out of doing that. It would kind of eliminate mid-tier tanking. And I also like, even if the Knicks wouldn't necessarily qualify this year because they're possibly too far out, like I love the idea of like a miracle run into the 12th seed. And obviously with that talent level, you wouldn't necessarily have a chance to beat the one seed, but in a single elimination style format, obviously, I mean, that's kind of the beauty of it. Anything can happen. And the way they're playing right now, like I love the idea of Alonzo Trier and Mitchell Robinson getting reps in a game like that. And Trier maybe going off for 30, because it is sort of that playoff atmosphere condensed into one game. And I mean, if you're on the Knicks over the last couple of years, you would have never even gotten the opportunity to play in that type of setting. And I am a big believer in the idea that for a young player, that is sort of an exponential growth factor. Like you get a lot more out of that than you do maybe even 20 seasons of tanking or 20 games of tanking basketball. So I'm 100% with you. I'm kind of looking at it now, and I think even this year would be pretty interesting because Atlanta would be the last team to qualify in the East, and I think they would be a lot of fun with how well Trae Young is rolling right now, and those guys are playing. Then you flip over to the West, you got Kings, Mavericks, opportunity for Luka Doncic to take on, I mean, for my money, like the Knicks get the Kings twice next week, and I'm super excited for those games. I think the Kings are like low-key like one of the two or three most fun teams to watch in the league. And then Lakers, T-Wolves, Towns, who's just going off against LeBron, and that team who seemingly all hates each other. So I guess that was a long-winded way of saying I love the idea.
Great, cool.
Yeah, all right. I guess we can just about wrap up on that. Neil, any other hot takes for us on the Knicks or on the podcast? Anything you think we can do better? I wanted to start putting this in at the end where we have our fans on and you guys can just kind of rip on us for about 2-3 minutes at the end of it.
Oh, I mean, I think you guys are doing great. It took me a little bit to get used to you two. Right. I mean, there were some weeks of audio quality that had me grinding my teeth a bit, but
can't blame
I seem to have figured that out. I do have one more quick conspiracy Knicks-wise that I just thought of today. The Knicks, I mean, clearly were tanking, I believe. And then the past couple games, including tonight, they looked very competitive. And I just want to point out the coincidence that they started getting competitive right around the same time these Dolan rumors came out about him selling the team. And maybe he's just showing potential buyers what they're really capable of. So...
Oh my God, Neil, I love that one. That was, I think, you saved it for the very end. I think that might be the takeaway from this podcast. And it is, I mean, obviously a lot of people have pointed out just how much better their defense has been sans Hardaway. But, I mean, guys like Trier and like Robinson just absolutely taking it up to another level. It is a little fishy. And I wonder if Dolan told Fizdale, all right, just get him going just the next few weeks. Do you hear that? That's kind of a good place to end too. Do you buy the idea that Dolan will have sold the team by this summer? Because right now it sort of feels like a tease. Like I'm not 100% there yet.
If if they do get Kyrie and KD, I certainly think he could pull the trigger, because just knowing what could go wrong with the Knicks, you know, I think people are saying wait for them to win a chip if that's the case, but I think that might be like the highest the market could be right when they get KD and Kyrie with all that media hype. I think if he's going to sell it, that would be when he does.
Yeah, I think I'm with you too. And that'll be sort of the peak excitement around potential buyers, and like all their friends will be like, oh my God, you have to get in on this. Like if you're the owner, when the Knicks win a championship, like you're going to go down as a god, even if you just bought the team that year. It's sort of the high upside play for the buyer, and in turn for Dolan, it's sort of the sell high point. And with that, a great place to end it. I really appreciate you coming on, Neil. I don't know if you do, but anything to plug, anything you want people to look at, or maybe just your Knicks fandom, and everyone can appreciate that.
You can just watch out for me and the Locks on Knicks feed. I basically got Twitter to keep up with you guys. So other than that, nah.
Oh, well, I'm flattered by that. And I will say, Neil, just to compliment you a little more on the way out, you are one of our more active followers. And we really, this is a message to you and everyone, we really genuinely do appreciate it, because we love doing the podcast, but if you don't get to interact with people, it's sort of worthless. And I know coming up from the net side, where we had like just one or two like crazy people who would respond to our tweets every once in a while, it's nice to sort of have a community around the podcast. No shots at the Nets fans, who we love too.
Oh, yeah. Well, especially for someone who lives in Maine, it's really nice to have a Knicks community.
Yeah, no, and it's amazing. Like you, I don't even think we ever really talk about this on the podcast, but I remember when we did the KP trade episode, we were looking at some of the analytics, and we had people listening in like 67 countries, which if you're one of them, shout out to you guys. I feel like I should say that every single episode. It kind of blows my mind as someone who's gotten to travel a little bit, but not as much as I would have liked to, that we have people, I mean, one, all over the country, and two, like all over the world, who tune in. So shout out to you guys. Shout out to you, Neil. With that, we will wrap up this edition of the Locked On Knicks podcast, and we'll be back in your podcast feeds bright and early Monday morning to recap the next game. Until then, be well. Peace out.